The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on October 10, 2004. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning. Well, this morning I want to talk about words. Words are very important to us. As human beings, we communicate with words, and without that, I think for us as social animals, we would have probably a difficult time of it. Certainly, if words were taken away from us, we would notice that difference, no doubt, certainly, right away. But I want to say to us something right at the very start before I get into this. I want to remind you, I think you all realize that I'm a fellow who basically, this is what I do. I work with words, both as a speaker and a writer. I work with words all the time. That's my job, my work, my life and my livelihood in many ways is working with words. I want to just say that up front in case you think that I'm going to be disparaging the use of words here. It's just that words have this ability to captivate us, to capture us, to carry us away in all kinds of ways. Nagarjuna, in a word, summed this up more like, he wasn't speaking specifically about words, but about concept, and that's what words convey, it's concepts. But he referred to this as deception. So I want to say a little bit about that. But of course, words are very important to us. They introduce us to all kinds of things that we might not otherwise know. Consider the words that were written down, recorded by ancient people, thousands of years back even now. And how would we have this today? Well, I suppose we could have carried on the oral tradition where it's passed on by word of mouth, but certainly a great deal would be lost along the way. How do we know about Shakespeare and Buddha and Jesus and Socrates? Because things were written down. Socrates himself, no, he didn't write anything down, but other people did. So we have a sense of what the ancient world was like, or even the more recent past. We get this through words, through the handling of words and the construction of words in sentences, the grammatical rules and things that are applied to the use of words. And so this is something very valuable to us as human beings. And I don't mean to disparage this in any way. But words also kind of occupy us in a way that we're not really aware of. Maybe until perhaps we sit down in a quiet moment of contemplation and we just realize how busy our minds are with words streaming through. And sometimes these words, they can be beautiful, wonderful. They can make us cry. They can make us laugh. Sometimes we just ache to express something, and we choose words, perhaps, to do that. So words are very much a part of our lives. But at the same time, we're probably, for the most part, not paying careful attention to the fact that reality, the truth of what's taking place here, is not conveyed through words. We use words to convey meaning, say. And then we think that meaning is somehow kind of a knowing. Now, I suppose it is a kind of knowing, but it's not actual knowing. It says in the Song of Jewel Mare Awareness, meaning is not in words, yet it yields to the inquiring spirit. Meaning is not in words. Well, what is that getting at? If meaning is not in words, don't we mean something with our words? Well, yeah, generally we do. And what is it that we mean? Well, we mean perhaps to tell the truth, to communicate with another, to get some idea across to someone else. It could be anything at all, just to show him how much we appreciated him, or to point out maybe something that went wrong over here or whatever. And very useful, very, very, very helpful, very handy. But if we think that we can finally sort out our life and understand finally what is taking place here, at some point we need to realize that this is where words reach their limit. Words cannot do this for us. Words are very deceiving. We get caught up with them in so many different ways, thinking that somehow we can actually convey something of reality to another, such as, say, a feeling, perhaps. See, words will convey concepts, ideas. You can't really convey a feeling with words. You say, oh, yes, I think I can. I can, you know, say something that's funny or humorous or something sad or whatever, and it emotes a feeling in someone else. Or perhaps it even intensifies a feeling that you have yourself. So we think that perhaps we're conveying a feeling, but actually that feeling is just something that's rising right up, right there. I mean, the feeling is the feeling. The word isn't the feeling. The word is something else, something apart from that. We use words to convey what we think is true and real. We'll tell stories of each other and of things past, of our own past, or one thing or another. And so often we believe that, well, I would say pretty much all the time, unless we're truly awake in this moment, we actually think that we're conveying something real and true and genuine. You hear the account of something or other and you think that this is true. We just buy it right off. Here we are in this political season where we're told over and over again to think this or to think that about a person or about a situation, or, you know, and we get this stuff in little, nice little tight little sound bites. Yeah, it starts to stick. And if we're not careful, we think that what's being conveyed to us through these words, we're not really thinking about it, but something is forming in our mind and we think it might be true. As if somehow meaning, truth can be conveyed through the words. But the truth is what's actually taking place within your mind right now in this moment. And much of the time, we're not paying attention to just what is forming in our own mind. Not paying attention to how what forms in our mind is so much tied to our concerns for our own personal safety and happiness and all of that. And so this shapes what we hear, what's being conveyed through words. And it captivates us, takes us away. So this practice that we learn here is about looking at reality directly. And that it doesn't come through the word. You know, it doesn't need to come through the word. That the reality, the truth of your life is something that cannot be explained, cannot be talked about really. You try it. You've probably have done this, perhaps. You just say something about yourself to someone. Have you ever gotten it right? Yeah? I don't think so. But we'll kind of toss that off. But you might notice, you might not, but you might notice that, well, what it is that you've tried to relay to someone else about yourself here is not quite right. But now, how are they taking it? How do you take the reports that you get? You think this is how it is. Of course, we even forget the fact that how you happen to be putting it together right now in your mind. It's not even what the other person thought that they were relating to you just a moment ago. Already, it's been altered and changed in your own mind. But what is forming there is kind of forming the basis, the foundation of your life, you know, who you are, what you're operating out of, how it's going to affect the next decision and thought and action you might take. All of this goes on pretty much unnoticed by us. But our practice here is to start to just watch these things, notice these things, come to realize that this is actually going on all the time with us. And we're not paying attention. And it leaves us kind of caught up in living out our lives in a way that it just simply doesn't match reality. And it generates a lot of anger and fear, resentment, also a lot of excited longing and craving and running and just excitement in general. All the while thinking perhaps that this has something to do with what's actually taking place here. No, this is something that is, it's real enough. Certainly it's real. Whatever's forming in your mind is real, but it's real as just that. As thought and feelings and ideas that are forming in your mind that only have a limited connection with anything that's real and genuine and true that's unfolding here. Our practice is about acquainting ourselves with just this, and in such a way that we don't get caught. And the subtlety and the ways with which we can get caught by this is just a quick example. So we notice what's going on here, and now we form a judgment. And we take another word. We say, oh, that's bad, that's not so good, or look at how I'm caught here. And on we go. And we just keep rolling on with it. That whatever it is that we explain to ourselves in our mind, we think that we have captured the truth, that this is how it is. That I have a bad thought now, or a good thought, or there I go again. And all the while, we're simply not seeing just what is taking place here with a kind of a dispassionate mind. So we're caught up in the deception, and we perpetuate the deception. Now, as I said at the beginning, I wanted to remind you that I'm a guy who uses words. I mean, that's what I spend so much of my time doing. And so I'm not saying then that the fact that we do this, that we use words, that we manipulate ideas and convey ideas, is just right across the board a bad thing and we shouldn't do it. First of all, we have to do it. As human beings, we have to use language and convey ideas. Just to get along in our daily lives, this has to be done. So this isn't a matter of blocking this out or stopping it or shutting it. First of all, we just can't do it. But more than that, it's not necessary that we do that. But what I'm trying to convey here this morning is to cultivate, that we need to cultivate a kind of sensitivity to just what it is that we're doing. This wonderful ability that we have to conceptualize our experience, to convey ideas and thought to other people, is truly a wonderful thing and a necessary thing. But without a little care given to the fact that we're caught up with something else that we think is being conveyed through all of this, is a very dangerous thing. We form ideas and beliefs as though they were real and true. And of course, we can look at other people, you know, who believe such and such or think such and such, and they act out of those beliefs. I mean, all the way from the stuff we see going on in the Middle East and flying the planes into the buildings. We could, you know, extreme examples like that, but just down to your co-workers and attitudes and approaches and ideas that they might have about one thing or another that just irritate you no end because it's so silly or ridiculous or stupid or false or not true, or things that get fed back to you. And we get so caught in all of this. We even get caught in the idea that, yeah, well, I know what's going on. I can see what's going on here, but they're caught, and that bugs us too, you know, that that they think that, you know. But first of all, you don't know what they think. You never know what they think, really. In their version of whatever it is, you could be looking at the same thing, and their version of it is already different than yours. Or they just heard the same word spoken, and it's already different. So you don't know. You don't really know what they're thinking or holding. But there we go with the words. We're forming the words. And we think that whatever it is that we're forming in our mind about this or that, the way we characterize it, is the truth. And that's what we get caught up with. So we've gone way beyond just the simple day-to-day utility of language, the necessity of it on that level, and we get carried away into thinking that somehow we're dealing with truth here in our thinking and in our grasping and in our conceptualizing. Now, if we understand the teaching of the awakened, they will tell us that you are never dealing with truth. Never, not at all. So as if enlightenment somehow comes with us finally getting the right idea. That is not it. That is simply not it. I've said this before, but I bet you it's probably gone past you. Then we got to just slow down and look at what that is, what's being pointed out there. Of course, what's being pointed out isn't anything you can really get a grip on, but that's what we're going to want to do. But the fact is that you can't. Whatever is conveyed is not reality, is not truth. It doesn't go into words. This is what is meant in the Song of Jhumir Awareness when it says that meaning is not in words. What it is that we think we get from meaning, and we do get meaning from words, but what we take as meaning then is truth. Reality. We think it can be conveyed in words. We're very much caught by this. But if we learn to examine, just look at our life very carefully, directly, we will see that the truth is never captured in this way. That it can be conveyed. The truth can't move from one place to another. It's already there. So it isn't something that needs to be conveyed or transported, or carried, or thought about. It is something for us to wake up to and realize in this very moment right now. And that's always the case. In each moment, it is right here. It is not conveyed in words. So we listen to a talk like this, or any number of talks, or we're reading stuff. Well, if you're reading about history or psychology or science or, you know, just reading a novel, whatever. Yeah, when there, just let that work in its usual way. But when we come and we listen to something like this, this isn't about, and I'm not directing your attention to somehow get the right idea about this, though you will be forming ideas, no doubt, from what I'm saying, and that's perfectly fine. And you shouldn't even, I'm not even necessarily saying just get rid of those ideas. That's perfectly fine. But the point of all of this is that we come back to repeatedly and repeatedly in so many different ways in this teaching, in this practice, is that if it's the truth you want to wake up to, if it is reality you want to see, realize that you're probably reaching for another idea, another word, another thought. And that simply is not it. That it is a matter of seeing what is here before you put the word. You know, I was going to say this, something I meant to say earlier in my remarks, but I read this somewhere many years ago. Ancient people, and I think we can only speculate, but perhaps way back, there was a time when, and I guess perhaps we find this in different primitive cultures. I'm sorry, I'm a little rough. I haven't brushed up on this lately. But what I recall from reading about this, and we find it in primitive cultures, where the realization that we could somehow capture something in a word, just put a label on something like tree, somehow is that we kind of capture that. Oh, you know, we've learned how to just do that. We can say tree, you know. And early on in human history, when we started to just this rudimentary language forming, and we got these ideas that somehow we actually could capture things with the word, reality with the word, that we could somehow hold that. It was magical, the use of words. And not just tree or stone, or a brook, but even more abstract things eventually started entering into our language and our use of language. And of course, we also think from thinking this way about language, we also begin to think that, or we can think that, well, like I say, these words are magical, and that there is kind of magical powers that can be captured or held if you get the right word that would capture this thing or another. Well, the thing I wanted to talk about with this is that where is this coming from? This is coming from our deep desire in the human mind that we want to know. And we want to be able to control our lives to some degree. We don't want to be deceived and left kind of helpless. This seems to have, through the use of language in this way, it seems like it's given us kind of this incredible power. Well, it's a matter of sorting this out, that this incredible power is, as I said before, that it is very useful in the world of utility. It does serve a great function. But we make the error into something that is very subtle in our minds, that we cross over into thinking that somehow, in the process of all this, that we can use language in this way to somehow capture reality and how things really are. And underneath it all, the deep ache of the human heart is that we really do want to know. We want to know the real truth, actual reality and truth. The problem that we suffer from is that we keep ourselves locked in concept, in idea. And we try to apply it there, and it doesn't work for us. So there's something that's going on right along the side of our ordinary everyday experience of thinking, conceptualizing, just sitting in your mind spinning or talking or any number of things like this. The usual workings of our minds in that way regarding language and thought. There's something else that's going on right along with that. Totally imbued with that and inseparable from that. And that is that we already realize, we already know, we already see reality. This is why people can awaken. But these things that we can capture through words and through ideas, concepts, feelings and emotions and thoughts and things and ideas, these are so compelling and so captivating for us. And we can see the effects of them in our daily life, how powerful they are to even make us go to war and to do all kinds of extreme things. You know, with real fervor and belief. They're very powerful things. But all the while that this has happened to us, there's something very quiet and subtle that is there all the while. And that is that deep down, and after all the hubbub has quieted in the mind, you already know. You already realize and you know the truth right now. It's just that you cannot form any idea about it. And as long as we keep looking for the idea, we never see the truth. And this is called deception. This is how we are deceived. This is what Nagarjuna, and all of this, if those of you who have come through the Nagarjuna courses, this is what he's doing over and over again, showing how it is that we deceive ourselves. Showing how that whatever you put in a conceptual form is always contradictory. Never matches actual experience. It couldn't be possible. But we're so captivated by the this and the that we can grasp, but that we never notice that. And so we're lost. So when the Buddha spoke of freedom, liberation, that's what this practice is about. Freedom from dukkha, suffering, pain, confusion. This freedom comes from just finally realizing what we're doing and how it is that we get caught. It isn't about abandoning thought, concept, the intellect, all of this, and the emotions. It is about understanding them and what is taking place and how it is that we get caught by all of this. So anyway, this is another thing I just wanted to talk about today. Just want to just talk about words directly. No, actually, I would like to take you through a whole list of words, but there's just too many of them, you know, to discuss. But to show how the different words would just catch us, and immediately we're off, we're lost. We have removed ourselves from what's actually taking place here. And yet all the while, we will think that we've got our feet on the ground. We will think that an exploration into how it is that we get caught is to wander off into some kind of abstract realm, when in fact, that's where we go into what is actually real. It's when we're caught by the word that we're lost in the abstraction. You know, I've done this a little bit with you, like for example, just the word me, I, you know, or you know, just say your name. What does that capture? You know. And yet, until we just kind of reflect on that for a moment, it would seem like we use it all the time. I this, I that, and it's very solid and real for us. But the moment you look at that, you realize that's quite abstract. Yeah. What is real here? And you look out the window and you see that brilliant blue sky out there. And we say blue, as if somehow that captures that. But we could talk about blue in the abstract. We can go into a room where there's no blue. we think we've captured something here. But how is it that word, that sound, is that? It's not that. If that's what's being experienced, that's what's being experienced. And the word really doesn't capture it at all. And whatever that word captures for you, it's not even the same as for someone else. Even if you say just blue, without some context, you might think that we're talking about how the curtains blew in the wind. Totally different word altogether, you know. Yeah. Another thing we could look at here that I was thinking I could have gotten into, but, you know, like in law, you know, we always try to get the language to pin it down, say exactly what you mean. That's really, you know. But you can't, you see. Then we talk about loopholes. There's always these loopholes. Of course, then we play around with those, and sometimes we create loopholes because we want some of these little loopholes back there that we can sneak away in. Yeah, I've told of how one time, it was actually the Zen Center, Minnesota Zen Center, many years ago, but they wanted to have a phrase about to convey that they were open to all. But they didn't say... I was trying to suggest, well, why don't you just say that you want to be open to all? We're open to all. But no, but then they want to say regardless, and then they start listing things. Well, you're not going to list them all. So if you're not on that list, does that mean I'm not included? And so if you want to be open to all, but we do this with law, you see. We'll have all kinds of intricately, you ever read a legal contract? I mean, you know, all the intricate details, you see. And we think we can do that. Just last night, the Eno, is she here? There we are. Handed me pardon me, Bev. This is not your doing. But you know where I'm going with this? But she handed me the list of instructions for the Doans. Wanted me to look that over. And I can see it's been built up considerably since I last parted with this thing. But it's just like a legal document. Just going on number after number and pages and, you know, and every little detail was virtually described. You know, how to turn, bow, and shake the well, you know, it's really a bit much, I think. Just open the doors and walk in, you know, and I think you can get it all in just to a couple of paragraphs, you know. But, describing every little detail. This isn't Bev's doing. She inherited this. It's something that's evolved over time with the Enos developing this stuff. And no doubt from people coming up and asking questions, well, how do you do? So then they write down, well, this is what you do. Same kind of thing occurred with the Buddha when, you know, in the community of practitioners. And they get into a squabble, fight, argument about one thing or another, and the Buddha would say, okay, well, let's do it. Don't do that. You know, he'll say something about it, and they write it down. You know? So at the time of the Buddha's death, then all of a sudden they had this long list of rules, you know, for the monks. You know, I mean, hundreds of them. It's been accumulated over little incidents, and no doubt that occurred over many years. And they didn't know what to do about it. So they, you know, they had this long list. And the Buddha said, well, just keep the ones that you need. You know, probably just a handful there, you know. But he didn't specify. And so they ended up keeping them all because they were... But this is what we do. We get caught by the word. And we think that somehow if we can say it, then we've got it. And we can describe it. And we don't realize that we're going in the opposite direction. If you're open to all, just say, you know, you should, because the closer we get to just something very succinct and simple and straightforward, you're closer to the truth with the least amount of loopholes and all the rest. But we will complicate. We will think about it, become more and more elaborate, more and more elaborate. Yeah. Or even, you know, like we invent something like baseball. Fun. It's just fun to go out. I used to play baseball when I was a kid. It was just fun to play baseball. But pretty soon it gets the rules and the regulations. And fortunately, they didn't. Well, Little League was probably coming around about the time I was a kid, but I wasn't in it, fortunately, I think. But pretty soon it's all the rules and the regulations and the one thing or another. And then you form the professional teams, and it gets more and more elaborate. And then finally the money gets dumped into it, you know, and it's on television, and then there's big salaries and all, and it just gets more and more complex. This is where we go as human beings. We just keep running, leaping in this direction, not looking at what are we doing? Where are we with this? How are we? Does your life feel kind of hectic and wild and crazy? Caught up with one thing or another? This is what I've been talking about. This is how we go with the idea and wanting to articulate it and spell it out. Get every little detail marked down. And to some degree, this is helpful and useful. We need a certain amount of this kind of stuff, no doubt. Maybe we need to say we are open to all. But so we do use a few words there. We have to say something, as my teacher used to say. But how much are we watching it, where we get caught and how we get caught? This is what our practice is about, is to see the actual reality that you're living in and that's unfolding with you right now, in this moment, in your own mind, and how you're conducting your life. So, yeah, this matter of words and how words carry us away, capture us. It's something we need to pay attention to. Though it is not something that we need to get rid of. Yeah. Well, maybe I've said enough here. But do you have any thoughts on this or questions or whatever?
What is the wording of the precept that ends not to say a single word?
Yeah. Yeah, the precept of not to commit false speech. Even to say a single word is to violate the precept of not committing false speech. That's what Bodhidharma points out, that even in saying something, as soon as we say something, we have to realize that there's something false about it right from the very start. And so we can only... We think we can convey meaning. And there, by the way, I don't know if I clarified that point. Meaning is not in words. There, what they're referring to as meaning is actual understanding. It's not in the words, an actual realization. What we think meaning is isn't really meaning. You tell me something, and you know this means that, and you know, in a practical everyday world, that's very functional. But when it comes to this matter of the real longing of the heart, I want to know the truth. A lot of times we don't even recognize that that's really what we want. But we think that we'll get it. We'll get that meaning, that final meaning of my life, what this is all about. We'll think we'll get it as an idea, as a thought, a belief, a concept. And we won't. So whatever we get that way is false. And to the extent that we hand it off in that way, that's committing false speech. But that's looking at this deception on a very deep level. So it's one thing when, yeah, you know, as you're dealing with other people, if you're being deceptive, you know, we should be watching for that. Of course, these are the precepts on kind of an everyday level. I was going to say superficial, but it's not really superficial. I mean, this is really important, you know, that we're aware of that. But we go on down into say in a case of, like, say, Dharma teaching, if you really think that you're actually conveying something particular here for people to grasp as an idea or a thought, you're caught in the deception. You are committing false speech. And of course, maybe the teacher, you know, Dharma teacher, say, who conveys this, maybe they're not committing false speech because they understand what they're doing. And as they talk, they are mindful of this. And they realize all the traps and snares that are out there in the language and everything that they say. But we will receive it in that way for the longest time until we begin to digest what it is that we've been hearing, what it is that's being pointed to. And what's being pointed to is not what's being said, because the meaning is not in the words. Okay. So at that point, that Bodhidharma is speaking on this very profound level, that actually we can't convey, you know, reality, truth at all in words. Not at all. And if we just knew that, and if we also realized that words are very functional, very useful, okay, so we don't throw them away, but you can't convey truth. If we just know that, if we sort that out, and you can contemplate this for a while and work with it a little bit in your life, eventually you can kind of, you know, see where you are with this. Then we don't have to get so caught. You hear this little rumor, this little thing, we don't get caught by that. Because you realize that nothing's really been conveyed here. What's been conveyed is somebody just now was speaking to you. What's going on right there, right here. It's not in the words. I've often said that too, that when you come in to, you see a Dharma teacher. And my teacher used to speak of it this way, but it's really quite true that very little is conveyed in the words. For most of the time we come in, we talk with somebody, we realize the words are conveying maybe 85% because we're not paying attention to anything else. But if you're really present, there's an awful lot more that's being presented in this moment than what's being conveyed in the word. Because the only thing that's being conveyed through words is ideas, thoughts, concepts, and those are mental constructs that actually aren't, have nothing to do with, well, I shouldn't say nothing to do, but aren't actually what they purport to be, which is representations of reality. They're not. Somebody who's awake is mindful of that in the very moment that this is unfolding. So what else is being conveyed then? Well, a lot. There's a lot of other stuff that's being conveyed at that moment. Also, too, if you go and talk to, say, a Dharma teacher, and you got your agenda, you know, you got it made up, you know, what it even might even have it made up of what you expect them to say, or what you want to get from them, you know, some kind of confirmation of your own, you know, idea and thinking here. Well, a Dharma teacher is just trying to help you to notice how you're hanging on to something here. You're just grasping. It's really all they really want you to notice. So the details of this or that, they're probably a lot less concerned about it than you might think. But they probably are concerned if you're about to injure yourself with what it is that you're thinking. That's a real big concern. But how do you deal with this? Well, not to supply another chain, another idea, something else for you to grasp, but to help you notice what it is you're doing. If you just wake up to what it is you're doing, you'll realize that it's really nothing at all that you need to be disturbed by. Okay, well, I'm sorry, I kind of let that lead me into some other thoughts here, but there's a lot here. There's a lot that could be pointed out. But anything else? Yes?
If you're watching TV and stuff, there are so many injurious concepts, it seems like, conveyed.
Oh, yeah.
TV,
yeah.
Movies,
and yeah.
Also, in a lot of the ways that people bring up their children, of what you should be or what you should be afraid of, like body image or not having the right shadow or all these different things. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it's very compelling. It's very gripping. Mm-hmm. When I watch TV, even the commercials are... I like to watch the commercials.
Well, the commercials are nothing but... Selling. Yeah, the commercials are nothing but trying to manipulate and to get you to think in a certain way.
But letting go of that is almost... letting go of that. It's so compelling.
Well, if it's a withdrawal, that means that you're still attached in some way. Mm-hmm. And it's not even a matter of that. See, this isn't a matter that we need to push anything away. It's like, oh, they're trying to manipulate me with that advertisement, and so we just want to push it away. Yeah, but you don't need to do that. That's just realize what's happening and watch what's happening with you. That's all we need. That's what we need to wake up to. Because you can't really push it away. It's going to come back anyway. This stuff comes back to us repeatedly. So we can't really, you can't just keep pushing everything. You don't need to do that. That's still being caught in bondage, you see. But to see, just to see this for what it is, and then it just not, doesn't have that kind of power to grip you in that way. And to, you know, the story of the Zen master, I think it's actually one of the first talks I gave after we opened Dharma Field, Zwigen, Zen master, he'd wake up every morning and then he'd say, call his name, Zwigen, yes, yes. Are you awake? Yes, I'm awake, he would say. He's just a guy talking to himself in his room, right? Yes, I'm awake. And then he'd say, don't be deceived by others. He said, no, I won't. But that's, so the first thing in the morning, he'd remind himself, because he knew how easily we're deceived. Well, who's other? Other is anything, it's not just other people, it's anything formed out there separate and apart from you. And it even could be me that appears out there as a concept. We deceive ourselves because we form ideas even about ourselves. And it's all deception. Now, a lot of this is very functional and useful. So as I said, it isn't a matter that we throw anything away or get rid of, but we need to see. We need to see the fabric of reality for what it is and how it works and how it functions. Otherwise, we are formed as some little self here, and we are tossed around by you know, longing and loathing and all the rest of it, and confusion and fear and all of that. So it's a matter of just realizing what's taking place. It's not a matter of, no, you got to do something to straighten it out. There's nothing to straighten out. That's also the understanding of the, you know, we say that may we exist in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. Nothing surpasses the boundless mind. This muddy water, this is where we are. We don't, and we think we have to get out there and purify the water. You can't purify the water. The nature of it is muddy. But because of that muddy water, there's a lot of nutrient in that water. So like that's where the lotus flower blooms, you know, in the muddy water. There's your purity, like the lotus flower blooms in the muddy water. This is what we need to do, is right here in the midst of all of this muddiness, that we ourselves purify. And what does it mean to purify? It doesn't mean to have lofty thoughts of some kind. It just simply means to stop grasping, to stop taking hold of one thing as if this were concrete, real, going to harm you. You have to have that. You got to push this away. You got to stop it. You got to clean up the water. All of this. We just can recognize this for what it is and to stop it. We stop it just simply through seeing it for what it is, and we just lose any interest or desire in perpetuating it, keeping it going. Nevertheless, here we are still in the muddy water. That's fine. That's where we grow. Yeah. So it's a lot less work. In the area where we are, we think we have to expend a lot of energy and effort, you know, to drive out these kinds of things. No, you don't need to do it. Just never mind. That's fine. Well, once you make effort in this area, you have to notice how you're caught. Even caught up in the idea that somehow I got to drive all this out. You can't drive anything out. Nothing leaves. You know, nothing that's real leaves. The stuff that seems to be coming and going isn't real in the first place. But that's, of course, where we're caught. We get caught by the stuff that seems to come and go. And in our minds, we make that substantial and real, you know. And now we're pulled all over the place with that stuff. But were we to see that isn't even real, that isn't really anything to get so caught up with. Nothing that we have to drive away. Because what is truly real can't be driven away. But it's a matter of waking up to what is actually real in this muddy water where we grow. And what is just stuff that we keep making up and letting capture us. Well, I think I probably better stop here. If there's any one urgent question, I suppose I can take one more, but yes.
I heard a wonderful story of you ago about a woman, about 80 years ago, an elderly woman who wrote a letter to a friend and accidentally addressed it to herself. And so she got it about 4 days later and read most of it before she realized it was a letter she had sent. And she responded to the letter and proceeded a long dialogue with herself by sending these letters out and then responded to the questions about how her life was going. And the gentleman I heard this from has, the descendant has this pack of letters. It's a long dialogue she had with herself.
Ah. Yeah, sounds interesting. Kind of like Zigan Zen master there. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.